Hey everybody, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. Got a couple cool things on tap for you today. First up, I've got a nutrition tip for you, and this is another one of my signatures, super simple, like almost like, holy crap, I'm a little underwhelmed by that tip, but that's great. In fact, I love it when people are underwhelmed by my tips, because that means that there's no excuse that you shouldn't be able to do it, right? So, you know, do it. Listen to the tip. If you're underwhelmed and you're not doing it, make sure you start implementing it. But it was just a good little discussion that I had this morning with one of my riders about helping him, you know, wrap his mind around getting his nutrition dialed in. So I just wanted to share some of the info that I shared with him with you guys. And next up, second, we've got a kind of a little special report thing that I've done on the top three clipless pedal myths. And again, I'm doing this in order to kind of help provide some more information for people. You know, I just want to make sure that, you know, if people do want to ride clipless pedals, you're doing it based on the facts and not the myths surrounding clipless pedals. And for those of us who are already in the barefoot pedaling tribe and have, you know, are riding flat pedals, it'll give us the information that we need to help educate other riders when we get the inevitable question about, you know, why don't you wear clipless pedals, and, you know, how do you pedal uphill, and how do you keep your feet from bouncing off the pedals, and all these things. So I just wanted to address those myths and make sure that as a, you know, mountain biking community, we're trying to base things on facts and not marketing hype and myths and lies and things like that. So that's what I got on tap for you guys today. So let's get to it. All right, for this podcast nutrition tip, what I want to do is actually this morning I had a discussion with one of the riders that I train in my facility regarding his nutrition program, and so I thought some of the information that we shared would be beneficial for everyone listening to the podcast, so I wanted to share some of that with you. But basically, he was just said, James, I'm not doing well with my nutrition. I know I need to do better with my nutrition program. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get motivated to do it. And so first thing, and I recognize this a lot, is you have to shrink the change. And so what's happening is that this guy is looking at where he's at right now. And then he's looking at what a perfect diet looks like. And the gap between where he is now and what a perfect diet looks like is huge. And so when you look at this huge change all at once, it gets very intimidating. And so what you need to do is shrink the change and figure out what are small things that I can do that will lead me in that direction. And so, you know, again, if you try to do too much at once, you're just going to frustrate yourself. It's not going to work. And so what I asked him first and foremost is, are you eating breakfast? And he answered, no, not consistently. And I was like, well, there you go. We just need to start with that. You need to eat breakfast. And when you can eat breakfast for 3 weeks, when you've eaten breakfast every day for 3 weeks, come back to me and we'll move on to the next thing. Now, you know, in discussing and with this, we're going to get into some of what those next things are, but that's what I'm talking about with shrink the change. Like when you're looking at getting going, you know, I've written about my 1-2-3s of nutrition, you know, real basic stuff, and you know, why calories don't count, you know, all this stuff basically hinges on, you know, building good habits and, you know, making the change something that you can actually do and institute. And so, you know, all the information in the world is no good if you can't actually put it to use. And so that's why I see a lot of people getting frustrated with nutrition, is because there's so much information out there and they don't know how to actually implement it. And so, you know, number one, you need to eat breakfast. And so, you know, rule number two is when we start getting into my 1-2-3s of nutrition, which is eat every 3 to 4 hours no matter what. And so, you know, in discussing this, you know, he was saying, well, you know, I eat a lot of junk food, or no, was he? And he asked me, well, what should I have for breakfast? And I was like, I don't care. I don't care what you have for breakfast. You just need to pick something. I don't care if it's a Pop-Tart. Get it in your mouth, man. You need to have something in your mouth. Eat it within the first 30 minutes of waking up. Now, I mean, would I prefer that he have, you know, plain oatmeal and you know, an egg white omelet? Sure, I'd love that. But that's not reality for him right now. This guy doesn't even eat breakfast every day. So he's not going to go from not eating breakfast every day to, like, you know, eating a a bland, you know, breakfast. And so that's why I told him, like, I don't care what you have for breakfast. If it's cereal, if it's a bagel, if it's a Pop-Tart, you know, a protein shake would be even better. I don't care what it is. Just make sure that you get something in your mouth. And at that point, you know, when you're able to do that, then we want to make sure that you're getting something in your mouth every 3 to 4 hours. And again, and he's like, well, you know, what about this? What about that? And it's like, man, look, you're not going to get yourself into too much trouble if you eat every 3 hours. I don't care if you eat junk food, because you're not going to get hungry. You get yourself into trouble when you get hungry. And that's when you turn a bad decision into a devastating decision. So, you know, instead of, like, you know, getting a, you know, small little bit of junk food because you're really not that hungry, but you know you need to eat, and so you're kind of like eating because you need to rather than you're starving, you end up waiting 5-6 hours, you start starving, and then you end up going and just blowing it, man, you know, just eating way too much junk food, and then you end up feeling like crap, and you're beating yourself up mentally, and it's just this vicious, you know, cycle. So, you know, if you could just do two things, you know, one, eat breakfast, and then two, eat every 3 to 4 hours, you would see a marked increase in your energy levels. You would see a marked increase in what you want to eat. You know, again, because as you start to, you know, filter some good food in and your body gets used to it, you know, I mean, I get this feedback all the time from people, like, you know, once you start eating clean, man, you can't go back to eating junk food. It just doesn't work. Your body doesn't feel the same. Like, you know, that was pretty much, you know, when he was asking me, like, how do I get motivated? And I was like, man, nothing motivates you like results. You know, you just kind of have to buckle down and do this for a couple weeks. Know that it's, you know, it's not going to be what you want to do. But when you start to see the results, that's what gets you motivated to keep going. And so, you know, in 2 weeks, when he starts seeing his energy levels are higher and he starts seeing, you know, that he's not getting as hungry and that he's making better food decisions, that's going to keep him motivated to keep going. And so, you know, that's, you just kind of got to, you know, shrink the change into something that you can do and then do it and then see the results from that and then use that motivation from the results to take that next step and take things to the next level. And it's that incremental approach that's going to lead to the lifestyle that you want and the nutrition that you need to support that lifestyle, I guess. You know, because again, if you try to go from crappy to perfect overnight, man, you know, huge gains overnight are like easily lost. And so, you know, by taking the time and laying the foundation and developing the habits and doing these things, you're actually going to end up, you know, better off in the long run than if you try to do too much at once. I mean, there's people that, you know, quit heroin cold turkey, you know, but they're few and far between. So don't expect for yourself to be one of those people. And, you know, if you know someone that just made like a dramatic overnight change in their diet, that's great for them. But that's not reality for most of us. So, you know, the take home message here for the nutrition stuff is, you know, to shrink the change. So whatever it is that you're wanting to do, you know, don't look at the totality of it. Break it down into small incremental steps that will get you to that goal, and then focus on step number one. And then focus on step number two, and then focus on step number three. And then before you know it, you're at the top, you're where you want to be, your nutrition's dialed, and you're stoked. So, but that's pretty much it for this nutrition tip. Pretty plain, pretty simple, but that's me. I mean, my nutrition stuff is pretty simple because, again, I mean, I live in the real world. I work with real cyclists. I know that nutrition is one of those things that a lot of people just aren't, you know they need to do it, but they're not super hardcore into it. And so, you know, telling you that you need to be eating this many grams of this and this many grams of that, and, you know, it's just not, it doesn't work as well in the real world. So that's why I like these simple little pieces of advice. Shrink the change, you know, which for a lot of us is just eat breakfast every morning and eat every 3 to 4 hours. And, you know, part of that does come with planning. You know, he's asking me, like, well, what do you eat with in that time frame? You know, I like to eat, Greek yogurt is good. The protein smoothies are good. Fruit. An apple, some string cheese. I mean, you know, you get yourself in trouble again when you don't plan. And so if you know that you're going to be gone for, you know, more than 3 hours from your house, then you need to walk out of the house with something with you. And so, you know, I mix up a protein shake and take it with me, or I grab a, you know, an apple and some string cheese and I throw it in my bag. So, you know, plan ahead a little bit. Don't sweat what it is until you're doing it consistently. When you're eating breakfast consistently and you're eating every 3 to 4 hours consistently, then you can start worrying about what you're putting in your mouth. You just need to make sure that you're putting something in your mouth at those times. So anyways, hopefully you guys have found this nutrition tip helpful, and I will talk to you guys in the next one. All right, so what I want to do for this podcast training tip is do a quick review of a special report that I posted at my blog at bikejames.com earlier this week. And the special report covers the top 3 clipless pedal myths. Now, before I get started, I got to do my standard disclaimer. I am not saying that flat pedals are better than clipless. I'm just saying that clipless are not better than flats, and that you are not at this huge performance disadvantage if you decide to buck the trend and stick with flat pedals and not buy into the hype and, you know, get into clipless pedals too soon. That's what I see a lot of riders being held back by, is a lot of well-meaning people at bike shops and trailheads everywhere are feeding people these myths, you know, these things that are simply not true. You know, they have a saying that if you tell a lie enough times, it starts to be mistaken for the truth. And so that's what's happened with these myths and clipless pedals. And so I just want to make sure that you know, if people out there do want to ride clipless pedals, that they're able to do so based on the facts and make an informed decision instead of being scared into trying them based on myths and half-truths and things like that. So that's kind of my mission with this special report that I wrote and this podcast, is to kind of help dispel some of these myths. So, you know, if you're one of those people who've been on the fence and you're like, man, I kind of want to try flats, but, you know, everyone at my local bike shop and all my riding buddies tell me that, you know, I'm not going to be able to ride as fast and as far, and so, you know, you're afraid to try it. Or if you're one of the people that have you know, you're part of the tribe, man, you're part of the barefoot pedaling tribe, but you still get a lot of, you know, questions from people about why you don't do clipless pedals, you know, this will give you the information that you need to, you know, help inform them as to why you don't do it. And, you know, if it's something that you've been thinking about doing but you've been afraid to try, it will give you the, you know, mental relief, I guess, to go ahead and try it and know that you're not falling victim to these myths here. So, clipless pedal myth number one: clipless pedals let you pedal with more power. And this is absolutely not true. There's absolutely nothing that shows that clipless pedals let you produce more raw power. In fact, some of the highest power outputs ever measured have been done on flat pedals. In fact, Nathan Rennie held the record at the Australian Institute of Sport for quite a while on flat pedals. He outdid everyone who came in, track cyclists on clipless pedals, everyone. He was able to outpower them, produce more power on flat pedals than any of them were on clipless pedals. And so I, you know, he's since been eclipsed, but, you know, not by much. But again, the fact remains that, you know, there is no proof that clipless pedals let you pedal with more quote unquote power. So, you know, if you can't climb that steep hill, that's more about being in your head and your pedaling technique than a lack of power from clipless pedals. So, you know, so now that we've dispelled that one, again, there's no proof that clipless pedals let you pedal with more power. It's simply not true. In fact, you know, it's quite the opposite. You know, not to get too far off subject here before I get into myth number two, but what kind of spawned this special report was that I always assumed for quite some time that clipless pedals were better, and that there was this mountain of scientific evidence showing that they were better. And when I finally started asking some questions, just saying, I just kind of like to see what the science is, you know, where do I find it? I started getting some pretty interesting answers, namely, the proof is not there. And that a lot of this stuff is just kind of like trail myths, you know? And in fact, that the science actually points to some very different answers than what your local bike shop guy has been telling you. So so that's kind of why what kind of spawned this and this whole journey of mine into flats versus clipless and all that stuff. But anyways, getting on to clipless pedal myth number two: you need to be able to pull up on your pedals to produce max power. Again, this is simply not true, no matter how many times it gets repeated. You know, when studied, the most powerful and efficient method is not pulling up and producing power on the upstroke. Instead, you need to drive hard with the lead leg and unweight the trail leg so it doesn't interfere with the power being produced by the lead leg. And so that's what an actual good, strong, efficient pedal stroke looks like. So this idea of trying to spin circles and you need to have, you know, equal tension on the pedals, you need to pull through the top, all of these things are simply not true. Now, you know, some of you guys are going to be like, well, wait a minute, that's what the pros tell us. The pros tell us that they pull up and push down, that they spin circles, that that's what they do. You know, and I'm not going to say that's not what they say, but I am going to say that a lot of professional athletes do not really understand how they do what they do. And a very famous story is Andre Agassi was once asked by some tennis coaches, you know, how does he produce such massive top spin on the ball? And he told them, well, I'm snapping my wrist. You know, I'm snapping my wrist over the top, and that's what's producing that power. And so they went back and started teaching their kids this wrist snapping technique, and they ended up with a ton of elbow problems and wrist problems. And come to find out, what was actually happening was that there was a lot of torque being produced at the shoulder joint, and it was showing up as a wrist snap. But Andre Agassi told them that it was the wrist snap producing it. So Andre was wrong. He's one of the greatest tennis players in the history of the game. And he was wrong about how he produced his swing. So if Andre Agassi can be wrong about how he produces his swing, trust me, professional cyclists can be wrong about how they produce their pedal stroke. So to them, what may feel like spinning circles and pulling through the top, when you actually attach them and look at, you know, how they are producing the power and how they are producing the pedal stroke, you see a very, very, very different picture. You see a very hard drive with the lead leg and nothing coming from the trail leg. That's what the science shows. So this also means that there is no magic pedal stroke that's only available by attaching your feet to the pedals. This has got to be one of the number one selling points of clipless pedals, is that if your feet aren't attached to your pedals, you can't pull through the top, which means that you can't produce max power. But if you don't want to be pulling through the top, and in fact, again, when they attach these cyclists in you know, to you know, the scientific equipment and stuff, and take a look at what does their pedal stroke actually look like, you see that when you put them on clipless pedals and you put them on flat pedals, their pedal stroke looks exactly the same. There is no deviation from a good clipless pedal stroke and a good flat pedal stroke. So in fact, clipless pedals let you get away with a bad pedal stroke, because it has been shown that when you are trying to pull through the top and spin circles, you actually produce less power, and it is less efficient than simply driving hard with the lead leg. And so you're actually able to get away with a bad, less powerful, less efficient pedal stroke by having your feet attached to the pedals. And so by using flat pedals, it forces you to learn how to produce the most powerful and efficient pedal stroke, you know, that you can. You know, the biggest lie that they ever told you is that you don't know how to pedal, and that you needed to do something different. You know how to pedal. It's the same as running. Your body produces movement. And again, without getting too far off subject here, people forget that we are, just because we're sitting on a bike, the rules about how we produce movement don't change. And so, you know, people look at us sitting on a bike, and this drives me nuts when people are like, oh yeah, well, that's all well and good about, you know, running technique and stuff like that, but we're on a bike and that's nothing like running. It's totally different. It's like, no, it's not. It is to your body doesn't care what you're sitting on. It wants to produce power the same way, because there is a right way and a wrong way to produce movement. And that right way and wrong way doesn't change just because you're sitting on a bike. So, you know, you need to look at a bike through the same, you know, view as you look at coaching any other sport, which is how are we supposed to move, and how do we apply that movement to this sport? And so that's how you want to be looking at this. And so when you take that mindset, you look at, well, how do human beings produce lower single leg, lower body movement to produce locomotion? It's basically, you know, running and walking. So look at how you run. You know, who on God's green earth runs by throwing their trail leg through the, you know, top, trying to produce some forward momentum through that? They don't do that. No one would coach you to do that. That sounds ludicrous when you put it that way. And yet that's what we're telling people to do every day with clipless pedals, and telling them to pull through the top real hard with their hip flexors. It makes no sense to me when you just look at it logically. You know, there's a place for logic in this world, and sometimes that gets forgotten. So anyways, again, so hopefully we've dispelled that one. Clipless pedal myth number two, you need to be able to pull up on your pedals to produce max power. Wrong, 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 wrong. So, and if you don't believe me, go download the special report. I've got two scientific studies referenced that will back me up on that. Go take a look at it. Check it out for yourself if you don't believe me. So moving on now. Clipless pedal myth number three. Your feet will bounce around and you'll have a hard time keeping them on your pedals. And, you know, this again logically makes no sense. Some of the top downhill racers in the world run flat pedals, you know, world champ Sam Hill being among them. So obviously you can go very fast through very rough terrain and not have a foot bounce off your pedals. You look at trials riders. Trials riders don't use clipless pedals and they're doing insane things on their bike. Look at, you know, slope style and dirt jump riders. They don't clip in and they're doing insane things on their bike. So don't tell me that you can't keep your feet on your pedals unless they are physically attached to your pedals. That's just not true. So two things will help take care of this. One, you need to get good shoes and good pedals. You know, it drives me nuts when people tell me, oh, I tried flat pedals once and I don't like them. I'm like, well, what'd you try? Oh, I, you know, some tennis shoes and some, you know, pedals off of my neighbor's Walmart bike. And I'm like, well, dude, that's, look at the shoes on your bike. You've got $300 shoes on and $400 pedals, and you're going to compare $700 worth of equipment to like $20 worth of equipment? What do you expect? You know, put some money out. Buy some decent shoes. Get some 510 brand shoes with sticky rubber soles. It's going to cost you about $100. Get some good flat pedals. They're going to cost you about $50 to $100. So for $200, $200 to $250, you can be in a top of the line flat setup. So, you know, you can't get any, you can't even sniff moderate level clipless pedals and shoes for that amount, which again makes me wonder if that's part of the reason that these things are pushed so hard by the biking industry is because there's so much money and profit in them. But anyways, not getting too conspiracy theory there, but so if you get 510 brand shoes with sticky rubber soles and some good flat pedals, it's going to totally change how you look at riding with flats, guaranteed. So, you know, be sure, and in fact, if your local bike shop doesn't carry 510s, one, find another bike shop, and two, or at least request that they get some, and if they refuse to, find another bike shop, and two, if you can't find anyone in your town, you can buy 510s from Zappos.com, and Zappos has a 365-day return policy. I actually called and checked on this, and they were like, yeah, someone can order these shoes, ride them, and if for any reason within a year they don't like them, they can return them, and we will refund their money. So there is a no strings attached, you know, no risk way to try these shoes and see if they really do make a huge difference. Now, the second thing is being able to ground your feet into the pedals. Now, this is a very specific application of core strength that you have to learn. And once you do, your feet won't feel like you're floating over your pedals anymore. And, you know, just a rough example, we've all seen the, you know, the 90-pound martial arts master, you know, old Chinese dude who you can't knock him over. You know, like big dudes are trying to punch him and hitting him with boards and, you know, you can't move the guy. And, you know, conversely on his end, he's able to knock freaking big dudes on their ass pretty easily. Why? Because he can ground himself and create a strong base and strong platform. So that ability to ground yourself is what you need on your bike. And so again, it's a skill that you have to learn. Just like the martial arts master didn't walk in the first day and had that ability to ground himself and get heavy, you aren't going to throw your leg over the bike the first day and have that ability either. So it's something that you have to work on and train. But again, once you figure that out, your feet will not float over the pedals anymore. You will keep them grounded on the pedals, and so that plus the 510 shoes will more than take care of any concerns about your feet bouncing around. So, you know, in conclusion, you know, I just want to end with this. In the hands of someone who isn't using them as a crutch, but is instead using them as an actual performance enhancement tool, clipless pedals have a place. I just look at it like a track athlete would. You know, again, maybe my track background just gives me a different insight into stuff. But when I ran track, we had training shoes and we had racing shoes. And you don't train in your racing shoes. Your racing shoes are very specialized pieces of equipment. And they tended to be very stiff. you know, uncomfortable shoes that would artificially strengthen your feet and allow for a little extra performance. You know, again, like I wasn't running, you know, 25% faster in my racing flats as I was in my training shoes. It was a small percentage of a difference, but there was a difference. I think clipless pedals are the same way. They're basically competition level technology, like race day shoes, that have been completely overblown and misused by the mountain biking industry. And so, you know, make sure that you're not leaning on clipless pedals as a crutch to make up for bad pedaling technique and bad core strength and an inability to ground your feet into the pedals. I know a lot of people don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that the problem is with them and not their equipment. But the reality is that's the truth. And so if you're not using it as a crutch to cover up those things there, and instead you're able to, you know, ride really well with flat pedals, and then you go to clipless pedals, now you're going to see some real performance enhancement stuff happening, and that's what we want. So again, I believe that you should be about 90 to 95% of the rider on flats that you are on clipless pedals. And if you feel that you aren't half the rider on flats as you are on clipless, that speaks more to your lack of good, strong, powerful, efficient pedaling technique and lack of ability to keep yourself grounded on the pedals more than an indictment on flat pedals and how they hold you back. So, and again, just to touch real quick, I do have these things outlined in a special report. Like I said, I have the studies referenced about the pedal stroke and why you don't want to be pulling up on your pedals to produce max power. And I've also included a bonus little section on building a better pedal stroke and three exercises and a little mini routine that you can use to start fixing some of the underlying issues that are really causing the problems with your pedal stroke when you try flat pedals. So hopefully this has been informative for you guys. Again, I'm not trying to, you know, discourage anyone who wants to use clipless pedals. I'm just saying, look, man, there's more to it than what most of us think, and that there are a lot of myths surrounding clipless pedals, and it really drives me nuts, and it makes me sad when I see riders that I know could do so much better being held back by the clipless pedals, and basically they got pushed into clipless pedals too soon. And they did it because people believe these myths are true. And so if there is a magical pedal stroke and they do help you keep your feet planted in a way that nothing else can, and you know that they do help you produce more power, then it's understandable why you try to get new riders in them as soon as possible. But none of those are true. None of those are true. So as a mountain biking community, man, we need to stop forcing new riders through, you know, the spreading of these myths into getting into clipless pedals too soon. You know, let them develop their technique with flats, and then if they decide to take it to the next level and go to clipless, then fine. And for those of you that have never ridden flats, I double dog dare you to spend a few weeks on them and see for yourself if you actually do turn into, you know, nothing. You know, if your riding just totally falls off the map, I think you'll be shocked. I think you'll be absolutely shocked after about two or three rides at where your riding level actually is and how little of a drop off you actually experience there. So anyways, we're going to wrap up now. So once again, hope you guys have enjoyed this. You know, again, just some food for thought. Yeah, I'm not trying to start a war between flats and clipless. I'm just trying to spread some more info so that we can make better decisions and get more riders into mountain biking and sticking with mountain biking and not getting scared off by this technology that's been way oversold to us in general. So anyways, hope you guys enjoyed this, and I'll talk to you guys in my next training tip. All right, well, I hope you enjoyed this edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. If you have any questions or comments on this, be sure to pop on over to bikejames.com and post them there, and I'll be happy to get to them as soon as I can. Also want to remind you guys to check out my new membership site at mountainbikeworkouts.com. For only $17 a month, you're going to get access to me through the forum. It's the only place on the internet that you're going to find me answering questions. I don't answer personal emails anymore. So if you got any question on riding faster, longer, with more confidence, that's the only place you're going to find me doing it. You're going to get my new 15-minute trail rider tune-up workouts. I'm posting one or two of these a week. These are great little things for you to do on days that you're not training, or if you're going to miss the gym, you can, you know, pop in a couple of these to make sure you minimize the loss. You know, some in-depth coaching cues that kind of take, you know, how to get more out of exercises, things that go a little bit more in depth, things that I find in my facility kind of help people figure out how to do exercises better, make sure that I'm sharing them with people on that membership site. And then finally, I'm doing a monthly teleseminar as well. So you're going to get an open Q&A session each month as well to ask me questions. So again, for only $17 a month, it is the best deal in training for mountain biking out there. You know, you could either fly to Grand Junction and join my facility for $400 a month, or pay $250 an hour for private consultation, or you got the Inner Circle website there. So anyways, again, that's at mountainbikeworkouts.com if you want to check that out. And so that's it for this edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. Hope you guys have enjoyed it. Be sure and check me out on the web at bikejames.com, and I will talk to you guys next time.